The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
And that's the two terms, presidential terms of Barack Obama. And now you can add to that his ruling of Mr. Biden, his ruling over him once again. But that isn't going to last very long, I do believe. He's getting too much power, and God is going to have to do something. And I think he's already started moving things, and the tide is turning. You would think, well, maybe God would have to, in some way, remove Barack Obama before we could ever have enough peace to bring Trump back to his job. But you can imagine, if he's out of the way, maybe he'd lose his power just by Satan passing on to another Antiochus, helping Jeroboam. You could see that the Supreme Court and other authorities like that would not be so fearful if something like that were to happen. But it is getting to be where it seems like God is going to have to do something rather dramatic to straighten things out and get Trump back to his job. So we'll have to see how things go there, but I think he has to be removed. I wrote in America Under Attack that he's talking about the Antiochus, but God doesn't mention the Antiochus. Why is that? He doesn't mention him here, and yet that's exactly the one he's talking about. And the reason he didn't use Antiochus is because he's beginning to silence Antiochus, and it is changing before our eyes. And you can see that in the news. He's setting out to blot out the name of Israel. And now God is giving him a taste of his own evil. He's blotting out what he has and the power he has. So he's in the process of silencing this political Antiochus. He is totally out of it. He is going down fast. And you can see it. Obama is being silenced. He's not all the way there, but in the end of all this, he's going to be, this verse, he really is going to be totally silenced.
Totally silenced. There's my father over the last, three, four years. And of course, it's even written about in America Under Attack, the book we've promoted on this show more than any other piece of literature. We give it away freely, no cost, no obligation. God silencing Obama. You saw all of the articles there, including this last one we'll draw attention to from just yesterday, how Barack Obama built an omnipotent thought machine and how it was destroyed. This is unbelievable. Right at the start of America Under Attack, it talks about how that they swooned before Obama. They worshiped him. It was will worship on display, just as Paul wrote about in Colossians 2. And it was there for more than a decade and a half. And then it just shattered. Then it just came crashing down almost suddenly, as my father was preparing us for, as recently as this past summer. But going back to 2020, 2021, he's getting too much power, as you just heard him say there. And so God's going to have to remove him. And God surely did. Do that. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the last show of the week. Can't believe it, and it's kind of sad because we love doing this. Yesterday, of course, Sam was filling in for me, and as it turns out, it was perfect timing because this article, that tablet by David Samuels, it was a lengthy piece, and I'm a slow reader. And I got through all of it. And then added to that, you've got the Wall Street Journal piece exposing the fraud that was Joe Biden. Fully exposing it. The 4+ year cover-up of Joe Biden's dementia and the fact that he was a puppet on a string. Well, where have you heard that these past many years? Here again, tomorrow's news today. If you haven't subscribed to The Trumpet Magazine, make sure that you call our operators and get a free one-year subscription. You see the 800 number there? All of this laid out in advance. God really and truly does give us some very special insight into what is coming. You see the latest issue of The Trumpet Magazine right there on your screen. Miracle victory. It was a miracle. There's another magazine that we produce for our members and coworkers. How Trump's Victory Changes Our Work. That's the latest Royal Vision. I mean, just so much that God has given to us. You can get to the live video of this show, by the way, at TrumpetDaily.com and also at the Rumble channel, Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. We'd also love your feedback. Just write us an email, TD@TheTrumpet.com. This is the show that typically, the Friday show, it's the one that typically gets some promotion on the weekend from Rumble. We hope that that will happen. And if you're listening to us or watching us for the first time, make sure that you become a follower at the Rumble channel and also send us some feedback through the Rumble venue if you'd like. Also today, since it's Friday, we've got the World Watch segment. So much to get to. We've packed in a lot. You know, this is supposedly the slow news cycle, but you look at what's going on, as Sam covered yesterday, Congress trying to ram through this another bloated spending package, and Elon Musk almost single-handedly just it blows up. I don't know what they're after today. I didn't have time to look, but they're trying to save face, the House of Representatives. We'll see what they come up with later today, if they haven't come up with something already. But that's happening in the House as they try to shove it down our throats and then move on to their holiday celebration like they always do, as you heard yesterday. You can be sure. I mean, looking at what Elon Musk has done and the support that he's got from MAGA. You know, they talk about government shutdowns as if it's like World War III. I think we've had 21 of them over the course of our history. And no one can remember anything about any of them because nothing really happened. If they only knew, and I think a lot of them know this in Congress, if they only knew how many people all across America would actually prefer to have the government, quote unquote, shut down. The bloated government, the runaway national debt, trillions and trillions of dollars. Is Elon Musk the only one in the country that's concerned about it? No, he's not. And, you know, the regime media, they're going to do everything that they can to try to drive this wedge between Musk and Trump. Trump wanted that second one, the scaled back version. But really, it was the same atrocious bill, just a little bit scaled back. Same amount of money going out, money that America can't afford. We'll see what happens as this drags on. But as I say, a lot happening, even as many of the talking heads are heading off for vacation. We'll continue. We do have some special things lined up over the next week and a half or so with our end of the year montage. I'll probably have another sub one or two days, but we'll see. We'll see how that it goes. There's probably going to be quite a lot to talk about even next week over these holidays that most people in the country observe. This David Samuels piece, though, if you remember, he was the one. He's the one that sat down with David Garrow, I think it is. He's the one that wrote the long Obama biography. Garrow hates Trump, but Samuels, he and Garrow had this exchange. We went through that over the last year or two. I forget when the date was, but going back to 2016, if you remember on this program, we talked about this David Samuels piece. I think it was in the New Yorker. It was with something in the New York Times. But, you know, he was another long article that we went through, and it talked about how that Ben Rhodes was this aspiring novelist, you know, this fiction writer, and that how that as Obama's right-hand man, it was perfect. It was perfect. All the technology changing as Obama, the dear leaders coming into his first term as president in 2009. using Twitter, social media, and all those things that we're just developing to basically craft a narrative and then shove it down our throats using all of the tools of big tech and the deep state to get a message out, no matter how fraudulent it was. And what he focused on back in 2016, David Samuels, was the Iran nuclear deal and how that they tried to sell it. They tried to sell it by promoting lies. And they had some good success in that echo chamber, as Samuels called it. This was a New York Times magazine piece. The aspiring novelist who became Obama's foreign policy guru. That would be Ben Rhodes. Ben Rhodes, who has a master's degree in writing fiction, is perfect. I mean, you can't make this up. It was just a perfect arrangement, a perfect setup. This is from the piece back in 2016. Again, this just to set the stage for the latest bombshell that he wrote yesterday or that he posted. He said in 2016, Ben Rhodes' innovative campaign to sell the Iran deal is likely to be a model for how future administrations explain foreign policy to Congress and the public. This was the model, as David Samuels' piece yesterday noted. I mean, the Iran nuke deal was just a perfect lead-in to Russiagate and all the other hoaxes. I mean, the FISA courts, everything, the impeachment proceedings, all the hoaxes and false narratives that they've been promoting ever since. But like he noted in his piece yesterday, it's all come crashing down suddenly. God did that. That's the only important wrinkle to this story that David Samuels wrote yesterday. The fact that God brought it down. It wasn't all, with all due respect to Donald Trump and Elon Musk and Benjamin Netanyahu, the three men that he credits for bringing this will worship down or exposing it. God's actually the one that's done it. Second Kings 14 brings this out. Again, you can study into this quite a lot more if you order a copy, a free copy of America Under Attack. It says here, the way in which most Americans have heard the story of the Iran deal presented was largely manufactured for the purpose for selling the deal. Even where the particulars of that story are true, the implications that readers and viewers are encouraged to take away from those particulars are often misleading or false. In other words, they lied. They lied. And the thing that's so amazing about this article from 2016 is that they were proud of it. Ben Rhodes was bragging in this article about how they duped and deceived even the regime media, the media that was in their back pocket. Rhodes said, "We created an echo chamber. Reporters and experts were, quote, saying things that validated what we had given them to say." Sound familiar? We've seen this for years. For years. These radical Marxist leftists that were taking over the country. They were feeding their talking points to Jake Tapper, Joe Scarborough, all the talking heads, and they just consumed it. They ran with it. I mean, if James Clapper leaked it to the New York Times, the New York Times printed it as if it was ironclad. Yeah, no skepticism whatsoever. No fact-checking. Just run with it. If John Brennan leaks it, James Comey, you know the gang, the cabal. You just go with it. You just print it. No matter what the facts say, they created this narrative, this fake news. And as I say, Ben Rhodes bragged about it. He said about the reporters, I don't even know if it's in my notes, but he said they didn't know anything. I think this might be the quote, they literally know nothing. That's what Obama and his lieutenants thought about Jake Tapper and all the rest. They don't know anything. You can feed them lies, and we know. We can count on the fact that they will run with it. Now, let's bring it up to speed with what David Samuels released yesterday. How Barack Obama, just think about this title or subtitle. It says, How Barack Obama Built an Omnipotent Thought Machine. I mean, this is like Orwellian. This is right out of 1984. A thought machine. You just go along. But as he says in the rest of that title, and how it was destroyed. I mean, this is miraculous, what we've seen. The control that these people had for what? Nearly 15 years? And it all comes crashing down about a third of the way into the Samuels article. He's describing this control, this thought control, this will worship, to use the language in Colossians 2. And then he says, until the fever broke. Finally, the fever broke. He says, today Donald Trump is victorious and Obama is the loser. In fact, he looks physically awful, speaking of Obama, angry and gaunt after a summer and fall spent lecturing black men and Americans in general on their failure to vote enthusiastically enough for their chosen heir, Kamala Harris. We had a show back on October 15th. This was 3 weeks before the election. And we were telling you then, look, my father, you saw in the cold open, he was saying in early July, look, Obama's going to be silenced. And then after Obama, he's seen in Pennsylvania lecturing all these black men saying that, hey, you don't want to be, you don't want to be anti-women. So you better vote Kamala. And as it turns out, the black community, they didn't like that. They didn't like being lectured by the dear leader. Why? What happened? In 2008, 2012, I mean, he had them in their back pocket, or his back pocket, but the dear leader. What happened between then and today? We produced this long montage that we led with on that October 15th program, and we've condensed it somewhat, but here's what we played. Back in the middle of October, clip 14.
We had not yet seen the same kinds of energy and turnout in all quarters of our neighborhoods and communities as we saw when I was running. Now, I also want to say that seems to be more pronounced with the brothers.
So they sent Obama to come get us and bring us back to the Democratic plantation.
He like it. They sent Obama back to come get us. He insulted us.
But for him to single out black men is wrong. But this is wrong for President Obama. It is a wrong course for the Harris-Waltz campaign to lay at the feet of black men when they have their reasons.
Why is it okay for Barack Obama, Kamala Harris, and all these other people that supposedly look like me? Why is it okay for them to get on TV and shame me for not voting for them simply because they look like me? It is racist, brother.
President Obama, what you said is not acceptable. What you said is not acceptable. Not to me, not to a host of black men out there. Whatever happened to disagreeing without being disagreeable, President Obama? Love me some Barack Obama. Always have, always will. Just very disappointed that you would say that.
Barack Hussein Obama, the audacity of you to say to us that we are required and we better vote for Kamala Harris and that we don't want to see a woman in a position of power. You're a liar.
One thing we've seen about Democrats over the years is that when they can't convince you to do something, they begin to insult you. Obama specifically, when he was having trouble with rural voters in Pennsylvania, go back all the way into his campaigns. He insulted them about their culture and values. I don't think it's helpful to insult a group of people who are already not enthusiastic about your campaign, but I think that's what he did.
Secondly, I think that it's really sad that you would come out against black men and actually degrade them because they're not picking the person that you want them to vote for.
It's 25 days before the election, and I got to say, it's not looking that great for the Democrats. I mean, this is not a good sign, you know, when you have an African-American candidate. You probably shouldn't be having to shore up your support among black men, but that's what's going on. No, Obama even came out yesterday to scold. I mean, he was scolding. Well, I don't know. Month of the convention, he was no scolding. Now he's scolding.
You all brought up Barack Obama to try to get us black men back to the demonic Democratic Party. We want nothing to do with the Democratic Party. We stand with Donald J. Trump.
I mean, first of all, Obama's not as talented of a liar as he used to be. But quite frankly, my ancestors fought way too hard for me to have the ability to learn how to read, just for Obama to expect me to be so uneducated to think that I would vote for Kamala Harris simply because she claims to be a black woman.
And I felt that it was incredibly disrespectful because he's making the assumption that we're not educated enough to lead our families, to look at the policies, to understand exactly what's going on with immigration, and we're supposed to overlook everything that they did over the last 3.5 years that was not in our favor. And now they've sent their messiah back to rein us in and bring us back into the Democratic plantation. And most men that I've spoken with have said that it's absolutely disrespectful and we're done with Obama.
As I say, that was 3 weeks before the election. The hand was writing on the wall. You could see it coming. And if you were a trumpet reader, you knew it was coming years in advance. As unlikely as it might have seemed back in 2021. You know, what Samuels brings out in his piece yesterday is that after Donald Trump won, miraculously, yes, in 2016, really what we saw after that was the dear leader who was even more empowered than ever because he was running the deep state and all of those operations to attack Trump. The spying, the impeachments, the Russia hoax, the Mueller investigation, all of those things. I mean, when Trump got in there the first time, if you were discerning, you saw with your own eyes just how powerful Obama's deep state had become. And then, of course, it culminated in the steal of the election in 2020. And then after that, I mean, we've had this horrific agenda. They dropped their masks. And for 4 years, we've seen such bitter affliction. And together with that, we've seen even more lies exposed. This Samuels piece says here, but reducing the question of what happened to Barack Obama's new American system to the results of a single election is in fact to trivialize the startling nature and ambition of what he built, as well as the shocking suddenness with which it has all gone up in smoke. I mean, the extent of this deep state weaponizing all these government agencies of what Barack Obama built. And then the suddenness that it came crashing down. It says here, the master political strategist of his era didn't simply back a losing horse, speaking of Kamala, rather the entire structure that he had erected over more than a decade and which was to have been his legacy, for good or ill, has collapsed entirely. Obama's legacy has collapsed. Obama's communist takeover attempt of the United States, it has crashed and burned. It's gone up in smoke. It says here, at home and abroad, Obama's grand vision has been decisively rejected by the people whose lives it was intended to reorder. At home and abroad, this is why Samuels brings in Netanyahu as one of the three that have brought down this will worship system. Trump, Elon Musk, and Netanyahu. Bibi, for his part, earlier this year, saying he intended to go into Rafah, and of course, all of the blowback he got for that. I think he said he wanted that in February, March. Didn't happen until the summer. But you've seen the way Israel has been on a rampage, wiping out Hamas, wiping out Hezbollah, the downfall of the Assad regime, the exposing of Iran. In this case, its weakness, but also the total control it had over this terrorist network. Now, as prophecy has informed us, you see the Middle East dividing along the Psalm 83 lines. So many, as Sam was saying yesterday, so many prophecies being fulfilled, even this year. It says here, the mystery is how and why neither Obama nor his army of technocratic operatives and retainers understood the fatal flaw in the new system until it was too late. They thought, even in letting go of Twitter, he brings this out in the piece, they thought, well, you know, the Twitter execs and the government influence, advertisers, I mean, we could just threaten Musk with the fact that, hey, your advertisers are going to leave if you don't toe the line. And I won't repeat what Musk said in response to that. He didn't care. He used some profanity with it. That's what I mean. He didn't care about losing Twitter advertisers. He didn't care that he bought Twitter for probably twice as much as anyone else would have been willing to pay. He saw what was happening to free speech. He saw the attack, not just on America, but on his billion-dollar enterprises. Tens of billions, hundreds of billions. I'm getting ahead of myself, but just coming back to this will worship, Samuels writes, Obamacare, well, you go back again, it starts most prominently with the Iran nuke deal fakery, the fake false narrative that Ben Rhodes and others were out there promoting. Well, before that, Obamacare. Again, the lies to try to pass it. Remember Nancy Pelosi? Well, we just have to pass this bill so that we can find out what's in it. That's the way they think. They operate that way. Even with this budget proposal this past week. What was it, 1,500 pages originally? They throw that on Congress Wednesday night in the hope that they'll vote on it Thursday and then they can all go and celebrate Christmas together. Nobody reads these monstrosities. It's the same with Obamacare. But just get out there, put the system in play, and spread the lies. Obamacare was followed by the Iran deal, which was followed by Russiagate, which was followed by COVID. You think about, you know, I was telling Sam yesterday after his program about all the prophecies that have been fulfilled this past year. You could have a parallel program right alongside what he put together yesterday with all of the lies that have now been exposed. Obamacare, Iran deal, Russiagate, COVID. You could add to that the sham impeachments against Trump, the fake insurrection. Just think about how important these false narratives were for all of these things. Silencing Trump after he left office because of Jan 6. Yeah, he's dangerous. He can't have a voice. He can't speak. Elon Musk was alarmed by this. He's off Twitter. He's off Facebook. He has no voice. As it says at the start of Lee Smith's latest book, silencing, silencing President Trump, covering up for Biden's dementia. That's the lid's blown off of that cover. Just this week with the Wall Street Journal piece. I don't even know if I'm going to have time to get to it. Just this week, silencing Trump, covering for Biden's dementia, all the lawfare against Trump. So many of those radical Democrats or attorneys actually campaigned on going after Trump using the legal system to put Trump in prison. They were campaigning on that before they had any so-called evidence of any crimes. They didn't need evidence of crimes. Just use the legal system to get Trump You had the assassination attempts, plural, just this past summer. As I say, look at all of the lies of Antiochus that are now being fully exposed. This was Jesse Waters on The Five yesterday afternoon, clip 12.
So all this conspiracy theory about, you know, Joe Biden shot, he's a puppet, it was true. I mean, at this point, we're going to find out he stole the election from Trump. At this point, the way things are going.
Jesse?
I'm just saying the way things are going, I wouldn't be surprised if we found that.
He's exactly right. He's kind of joking there. And he better be careful, by the way, because this is still one lie that you're not to expose. Rigging the election. Samuels had quite a lot of detail about COVID and how it was weaponized, just like Lee Smith did in his book. We talked about that with him last week. Samuels says, messaging around the pandemic was the fourth and most far-reaching permission structure. This is, I guess, a phrase that David Axelrod came up with in the lead up to Barack Obama's first campaign. I don't even know what these things mean, but it's basically to get the masses to agree with you even when they don't agree with you. It's will worship. To get them to agree with you even when you don't have the facts. That's John 8:44 right there. It says here, this permission structure game that was run by small clusters of operatives on the American public, resulting in the revocation of the most basic social rights. This is, again, speaking of the COVID lockdown policies, like the right to go outside your own home or visit a dying parent or child in the hospital. COVID also proved to be an excuse for the largest wealth transfer in American history, comprising hundreds of billions of dollars from the middle and working classes to the top 1%. Yeah, Jeff Bezos and company, they got richer and richer during COVID while you got poorer because you had to shut down your grocery store or whatever it was. Most ominously, COVID proved to be the means for remaking the American electoral system. Uh-oh. Are we getting into the election steal? You notice more and more people, even 4 years on, are waking up to the fact that it was stolen? We told you that from day one. It was so obvious. As well as providing a platform for a series of would-be social revolutions in whose favor restrictions on public gatherings and laws against looting and public violence were suspended due to manifestations of public opinion on social media. Yeah, let them riot, let them murder, let them steal, loot, whatever they want to do in the summer of love. But then, just a few months later, now all of that is strictly forbidden. Now we're pro-police, especially the Capitol Police, because we got to crack down on MAGA, and did they ever, the largest investigation in DOJ history. Thousands of MAGA supporters in jail, imprisoned because of a fake insurrection. Here again, Obama's got his fingerprints over all of these things. After Jan 6, who was it that got Donald Trump censored on social media? That would be the Obamas. Look at the power they had. Just like my father said in that cold open, they're getting too much power and God's going to have to remove them. God's going to have to take them out of the way. God did that. We've seen it. We've seen prophecy fulfilled right before our eyes. It says here, the permission structure machine that Barack Obama and David Axelrod built to replace the Democratic Party was, in its essence, neither modern nor conservative, though. Rather, it is totalitarian in its essence. Lee Smith, remember in his book, he says that during those COVID lockdowns and such, Americans experienced or had their first taste of totalitarianism. That's from Barack Obama, the dear leader. He's the one that lowered the boom on our society, starting with Obamacare, then the Iran deal, then the Russia hoax, and on and on and on it goes. It says a device for getting people to act against their beliefs by submitting new and better beliefs through the top-down control. This is speaking of the totalitarian state. And leveraged application of social pressure, which, among other things, eliminates the position of the spectator. It says here, the party is the ghost in the machine, which appears to run on automatic pilot, using the human desire for companionship and social connection as fuel for an effort to detach individuals from their own desires and substitute the dictates of the party, which is granted the unlimited right to enforce its superior opinions on all of mankind. Like Samuels goes on and says, I mean, it's George Orwell, exactly what he describes in his book, his novel, speaking of novels. And we've seen it. It's almost like it was a prophecy. Well, God also, and in ways much more significant than George Orwell, because you can look at what Herbert Armstrong was writing back in the 1950s and 60s. I forget when Orwell came out with his book. Wasn't it in the 50s, the early 50s, late 40s? I forget. But Mr. Armstrong, he wasn't writing a novel. He was telling you the truth based on Bible prophecy. The communist infiltration of the United States of America. It's prophesied. You can read all about that, and he was right. I mean, God has drawn our attention to this for nearly a century. And now look at what we've seen. There you see he was right. The 800 number. That too, offered without cost or obligation. Well, Samuels in his piece, he talks about three powerful men that intervened. Again, he doesn't see God behind these prophesied events. But these three men, he's speaking of Musk, Trump, and Bibi Netanyahu. It says here, it took three powerful men, each of whom had the advantage of operating entirely in public and with massive and obvious real-world consequences, to rupture the apparatus of false consciousness that Obama built. In doing so, they saved the world, for the moment at least. It says, while history will judge whether their achievements were lasting, it is clear that if they hadn't acted as they did, we would still be living inside the machine. The echo chamber would still be dominating the narratives that you hear on Morning Joe and elsewhere. But all that's shattered. The first of these men was Elon Musk, who is notable for having purchased Twitter in 2022 after Joe Biden had been safely installed in the White House. I mean, think about just the sequence of events here. They successfully rigged and stole the 2020 election. They installed Joe Biden. Samuels uses the right word there. They install the puppet. They install Biden, who had dementia, and they covered it up with more false narratives. And then Musk comes along and he buys Twitter for $44 billion. And so far as we know, there were no other buyers. He wasn't even bidding against someone else. And had someone else been there, they probably would have offered about $20 billion. Why did he do it? Samuel says, Elon Musk's decision to buy Twitter was in turn a necessary precondition for the election of Donald Trump, which was in turn made possible by Trump's own split-second decision on July 13, 2024, to turn his head. That's speaking of the assassination attempt. Just millimeters away from being murdered by this machine constructed by Obama and his lieutenants, Ben Rhodes, David Axelrod, and all the rest. Now you look at, again, the power and the influence, and Samuels gives quite a lot of credit to Elon Musk, suggesting that Trump couldn't have won the election without him. And then today, or this week, you see Musk blowing up these budget deals. And the regime media, of course, they're right on cue. They're there to try to appeal to Donald Trump's vanity. That's what's going on here. Saying that, oh, I think Musk is the real president. This is from the people who had no problem with the real president living in a private home down the road from the White House for 4 years. Now, all of a sudden, they're very concerned. If anyone has any kind of influence on Trump's decision making, or if he's opposed to what Trump believes about the budget deals and so on, he must be running the country. And we can't have that. Well, you had that for 4 years. Didn't seem to bother you then when the dear leader was running the puppet. Listen to these people, these frauds, as they're obviously trying to drive a wedge between Musk and Trump. Clip 13.
Welcome to the Elon Musk presidency, one where Donald Trump has been relegated to be the vice president.
Elon Musk, the guy who really runs things, he's not just Trump's co-president. I think that's way too low a title. He's the head dude in charge.
I don't think Donald Trump wants to have the perception that Elon Musk has more juice, more power over these members than he does. Elon Musk was the one calling the shots, and Donald Trump ran to get to the front of the parade on that.
Who's in charge? Is it Elon Musk? Is it Donald Trump?
It appears that Elon Musk is trying to take the role as an unelected president.
They didn't vote for Elon Musk. They voted for Donald Trump. Saying, you know, all of these headlines about President Musk or Speaker Musk, every time that comes up from a Democrat or a Republican or the press, I think it's a real chink in Trump's armor. And as soon as Trump figures out that Elon Musk is bigfooting him and making him look pretty weak, I think Trump is going to marginalize him real quick. He'll
is that Trump has met his match. Musk did this on his own. I doubt he talked to Trump about it first.
And though Elon Musk, he wasn't elected, but he sure holds a perch of power. It was Musk, not Trump, who started going after it on social media. It seems like he's got the president's ear, and it seems like he's wielding a lot of power.
I don't think Donald Trump is for very long going to like people talking about President Musk and how
Trump looked tiny yesterday. He looked like a very little man, and that has got to be bugging him big time.
We know how this works. When someone starts to get a lot of attention, when a Trump staffer or an aide or a friend or a family member even starts to outshine Donald Trump, Donald Trump doesn't much care for it.
Republicans and former Republicans referring to Donald Trump right now as Vice President Trump, that is not going to sit well.
The only theory I do have, and I love it, is that Trump is planning to destroy Elon Musk. He puts him out there in the beginning, early in the Biden, late in the Biden administration, and he has him destroy himself because he can't work with the Congress. He can't put together a coalition. He can't get 218 votes, which is the name of the game in House of Representatives. 218. I lived with that for 6 years with Tip O'Neill. If you don't get 218, you lose. Tell him that. And blame it all on Musk. And I think Trump would like to get rid of his new partner, his new dancing partner. No. I don't think he really wants him around. He doesn't like him around. He's basically been saying already, when are you leaving? I think he means it.
Just tune him out. Tune him out. They're so out of touch. And talk about a lack of self-awareness. What? Trump looked tiny. Did he look tinier than Joe Biden these past 4 years? Musk? He wasn't elected. Was Barack Obama elected in 2020? No, but he was running the show. It was his third term. And before that, he was running the deep state. If you add the shadow campaign from 2017 to 2020, Obama was well on his way to a fifth term this past November. Instead, it all came crashing down, didn't it? Why? How? Samuels brings out in his piece, I mean, when all of that happened in 2020, I mean, you could be forgiven for thinking they're going to be in power for the next several generations because they control. They control the government agencies. They control the big institutions, big tech and so on. They control academia. And most importantly, they control the election process. And they radically transformed it in 2020. What's to stop them from holding on to power from here on out? God, that's who. God did it. God stopped them. This article from the Wall Street Journal. Well, first from the Daily Mail. This is just from yesterday. Biden was never president. Can you believe this? And then so many of the, and again, the Daily Mail is fairly conservative on many issues. Certainly not on just morality, but with respect to politics, they get it right there from time to time. But even to see left-wing journalists reporting now as if, you know, hey, he wasn't the real president. And yeah, he did have dementia. Some of them are honest enough to say, you know what, I've learned from this, so I'm going to be more forthright in the years ahead. Sorry, too late. Too late for the mea culpa. It says here, it's been so obvious, not just to us, but to the entire world, that President-elect Trump, since winning the election, has been treated as the acting American president. It's Trump who talks with Netanyahu. It's Trump. And this is all reasons why Biden was never seen as the actual president. So, I mean, this is just yet another proof that Obama's been silenced. Because he's the real power behind Biden. And like someone noted, a clip we played, I think it was last week, they said, you know, in 2016, when Trump won, you had all these Obama people. Obama at that time had power still. And all the Obama people were lecturing the Trump people, saying, look, one president at a time. And meanwhile, Obama was getting the security state apparatus ready to spy on Trump, to attack Trump, to try to put Trump in jail. This time around, Obama's power is gone, and Joe Biden's been exposed as a fraud. And the whole world is treating President-elect Trump as the president. Listen to this. Further on in this piece, Barack Obama, who apparently was running his third term from behind the curtains, Biden, using Biden as his useful idiot. That's the Daily Mail from yesterday. The Daily Mail. Let me just play you one of someone who, I don't know if you can call it a full-on apology, but this is Chris Silesia, I think from CNN, clip 4.
As a reporter, I have a confession to make. I should have pushed harder earlier for more information about Joe Biden's mental and physical well-being and any signs of decline. Republicans would regularly ping me and say, why don't you ask more questions to Joe Biden and how he's doing? He's 76, 77, 78-year-old man. And I would sort of brush them off, because what I would say is, well, there's no obvious evidence that he's declining. Yeah, he moves a little slower, he talks a little slower, but there's no evidence that he's declining. And the White House and the people around Joe Biden were absolutely adamant that suggesting anything, asking the question about whether he was in some physical, mental, or both decline was offensive. The fact that I probably should have pushed harder on the Biden age stuff, because in retrospect, it's clear that the people close to him knew that at best, he had some good days and some bad days. June 27th, the debate clearly was a bad day. But if the bad day was that bad as he performed on that debate stage, the fact that he had been president without a whole lot of questions being asked about his physical and mental decline. And I'll add the fact that he continued to be president from June 27th until January 20th, 2025, I think is a little bit concerning and begs the question of, like, what? When did people near him know? What did they know? And why did they not share? I get protecting Biden's privacy, but he's the president of the United States.
So he goes on and says, I don't have time to play it, but basically he goes on and says, I should have pressed harder. I've learned my lesson, and now we're going to press hard on Trump. That's the big takeaway. We've learned our lesson, so now we're going to be more aggressive in going after Trump. Well, how convenient is that now that Trump's coming back in? These people are frauds, and most of them still have jobs. Some of them have lost jobs because they've lost so many viewers. Listen, this is to show you how far they were willing to go to lie and to tell you, don't you believe your lying eyes. You just believe what we say. This was Joe. We've played this two or three times before, but this is Joe Scarborough, March 6th of this year. Just 9 months ago. This is clip 10.
I've said it for years now. He's cogent. But I undersold him when I said he was cogent. He's far beyond cogent. In fact, I think he's better than he's ever been. Intellectually, analytically, because he's been around for 50 years. And, you know, I don't know if people know this or not. Biden used to be a hothead. Sometimes that Irishman would get in front of the reasoning. Sometimes he would say things he didn't want to say. This is... And I don't really, you know what? I don't really care. Start your tape right now because I'm about to tell you the truth. And F you if you can't handle the truth. This version of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever. Not a close second. And I've known him for years. The Brzezinskis have known him for 50 years. If it weren't the truth, I wouldn't say it.
If it weren't the truth, I wouldn't say it. Got it. It wasn't the truth. And he said it anyway. He lied. And all the rest of them did as well. And then they pretended to be shocked on June 27th. And now you've got the full-on exposés all over the place. Wall Street Journal, the Daily Mail, the journal piece, How the White House Functioned with a Diminished Biden in Charge. This is like, I should have gotten a word count on both of these. This is like the David Samuels piece. It goes on and on and on. So much evidence. But you see, the will worship system, that's what we'll call it, that Barack Obama had constructed, that was in place back in March. Obama still had quite a lot of power. They lied and said dementia. Joe Biden was, you know, he was doing just great, better than ever. This version is the best I've ever seen. And then look at what happened just months later. Look at what happened in just a few short weeks over the middle of the summer. The debate, the assassination attempt. That's just a couple weeks between those. The couple weeks later, Kamala's installed. They throw Biden under the bus, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So much prophecy being fulfilled, just like Sam was saying yesterday on the show. I don't have time to go through the Wall Street Journal piece. Maybe we can come back to it next week when the news, evidently when the news is supposed to be slower. It doesn't seem like there's been much of a let up, at least this week. We'll see how it goes next week. Maybe we can... touch on some of these themes again. I've got quite a bit, just even from our literature, on the will worship. My father gave a classic article back in 2020, what was the name of that article? The Dangerous Age of Will Worship, something along those lines. We've got something to say on that in America Under Attack as well. But I have already taken you a few minutes over because I want to make sure that we squeeze in this week's segment on World Watch. It's important to see the big picture. That's what World Watch endeavors to do each Friday episode. So we'll have to leave you hanging on some of these other stories I'd love to get to. We'll get to them next week. But for now, you can enjoy World Watch to finish today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on today's show. Thanks for joining us all week. And we'll see you next week.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz lost a parliamentary confidence vote on December 16th. Scholz called for the vote and even expected to lose, hoping that an early election would revive his party's popularity. Snap elections will now be held on February 23rd. Germany's coalition collapsed last month because Scholz fired his finance minister, leaving the minority administration in dispute over the budget. Rather than boosting popularity, the confidence vote only provides more evidence of the widespread dissatisfaction with Scholz's leadership. Currently, the Christian Democratic Union leads in the polls, more than 10 points ahead over Schultz's Social Democratic Party. The increasingly popular far-right Alternative for Deutschland Party is in second place, slightly ahead of the SPD. Many parties have said they will not work together with the AfD to form a coalition. This means that the more popular the AfD becomes, the more difficult it will be for other parties to form a stable coalition after the upcoming elections. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry has repeatedly warned that a weak coalition in Germany will open the door for a strong leader to rise in Europe. To learn more, read our free booklet, A Strong German Leader is Imminent. Israel bombed hundreds of Syrian military sites last week following the collapse of Bashar Assad's government in an effort to neutralize military assets that could threaten Israel. The Israeli bombing campaign targeted Syria's most strategic weapons stockpiles, including those containing warplanes, helicopters, naval vessels, armored vehicles, long-range missiles, and most importantly, chemical weapons. Israel asserted that its troops will remain stationed in the buffer zone between the two countries, but that the airstrikes would carry on as a temporary measure to solidify Israel's long-term security. The decades-old dictatorial dynasty in Syria has been toppled, and its military capabilities have been destroyed practically overnight. Syria is no longer under Iran's thumb. Now every major world power wishes to engrave its own interests on Syria. The Trumpet has long forecast the ultimate outcome of the crisis in Syria based on prophecies in Psalm 83 and Daniel 11 and 12, which show Iran losing its influence over Syria and Germany taking over. To learn more, read Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry's 2012 article, How the Syrian Crisis Will End. Russia's state-owned company Rosneft agreed to supply nearly 500,000 barrels of oil per day to Indian private refiner Reliance on December 12th, marking the largest energy agreement ever made between the two countries. The 10-year agreement is valued at about $13 billion per year at current market prices. Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine, India has become the biggest importer of Russian oil. India refines a large portion of that oil and sells it to Europe, allowing Russia to circumvent sanctions. In recent months, Russia and India have deepened their trade relations and military cooperation. The Bible foretells a massive alliance of Asian powers called the Kings of the East. This alliance will be headed by Russia and will include India. To learn about this alliance in detail, read Russia and China in Prophecy. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.